Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for May 11th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, President Barack Obama's fast-track trade agenda faces big tests this week in Congress. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on best practices to manage herbicide resistance. And the folks from Earth Risk Technology in Chicago will look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter wheat, 509 and a half down one. Soft May, 476 and a quarter down a quarter. May corn settling 358 and a quarter down a quarter. July, 360 and a half down 2.5. September, 365 and a half down 3. December, 375 and a half down 3.75. May soybeans settling 983 down 1.5. November at 949 and a half down 2.5. May soybean meal 312.10 down 3.10. May soybean oil 3304 up 24 cents. June live cattle 150.30 down 120. May feeder cattle 216.95 up 107.5. The August was 217.22 and a half. They were down 40. And May lean hogs 80.80 and they were down 5 cents. And those are the Monday settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade. Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says the Midwest will see a brief period of dry weather this week, and planting should resume in many areas before a period of wet weather begins Wednesday evening and continues through May 25th. The wet weather expected will include the northwestern Corn Belt, and further improvements in soil moisture are likely. Some planting should occur between rounds of rain, but planting progress will be sluggish. Conditions for crops in the large part of the Midwest, where planting has already occurred, will be highly favorable. The best conditions for planting in the West will occur today into Wednesday, when most areas will be dry, while the East sees mostly dry conditions Tuesday into Wednesday. Showers will increase in the West Wednesday evening and in the East Thursday, and two rounds of nearly widespread rain will occur by Monday of next week. Another round of frost and a few light freezes will occur Tuesday and Wednesday mornings in parts of the upper Midwest, and some early planted corn and soybeans may be damaged by the cold. Temperatures should not be cold enough, however, for a long enough period of time to do more than burn back vegetative development of these crops, but more serious damage may be possible in some of the fields that were planted earliest. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. He is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, why did we trade today exactly? Because when we last left off, we were right about where we are now.
Yeah, it was kind of a lackluster day. I mean, if you're in there day trading scalp a little bit, you had a few opportunities there. But from a producer's point of view or a long-term trader's point of view, kind of non-eventful as a whole. Volume-wise, low. Commodity fund activity relatively low in the grain complex. You know, a lot of activity in the bonds and Dow and so forth, but in the grains, kind of a hurry-up-and-wait type of atmosphere. I don't know if the planning progress report this afternoon will shed any light on anything or not, but most awaited numbers will be tomorrow morning's monthly supply demand numbers as they fill in some blank spaces on these cheat sheets we have.
So let's talk about both of those. Let's talk about the planning progress this afternoon first. What's expected?
Wide range. You know, somebody's going to say, well, I nailed it. But corn anywhere from 70 to 80%. A lot of trades, you know, that's 75% complete as a nation versus 58% last week. Beans anywhere from 20 to 35%. I believe a lot of them is around 25% complete as a nation. So we'll, you know, see how those numbers fall. Those close to those numbers, you know, we're ahead of pace, actually, compared to past history. We'll quickly shift focus to that last 5%, but at that same time, we'll be more focused on the crop conditions because we'll get to that stage here in about 2 weeks. Quite a bit of crop will hopefully be up, and we'll start evaluating how good to poor to excellent the corn and bean crop is.
I would think the numbers would be pretty good based on what we've seen thus far in terms of weather.
Well, unless your farm's underwater here for more than, you know, 3 days, and that's going to be kind of a bad situation. But for the most part, you know, it should be fairly decent start. You know, Oklahoma and some places out west there received a huge amount of rain. Texas, I mean, shoot, they've been from drought to flood in a short period of time. And if it's your farm, it's serious, and there is some problem areas there. But as a whole, it's hard to get real bullish on too wet weather this time of year. It happened in 93, but it didn't happen until late in the growing season when we actually saw the levees break.
All right, let's turn our attention then to tomorrow's WASDE report due out at 11 a.m. Central Time. Our first new look at 15-16 prospects, setting a benchmark, I suppose, for going forward.
Yeah, it's, they're going to put some type of yield on it, and we're going to debate that yield for, you know, for probably a full year. Acreage, you know, we'll battle that for a little bit and see what the June estimates are. Then, thirdly, would be demand, and then demand is getting to be a concern. You know, the new crop marketing years, you know, not up to the pace it was a year ago. But, you know, it's still a long time ago in 15. We're still wrapping up this last marketing year, particularly on corn. I mean, we sold a lot of old beans, and now we're working on moving the old corn around. But it's going to make the market here for some time to come. To have a surprise tomorrow, if it's outside the range that they've built in, we'll be locked limit for 2 days of trade because it's a very wide range. And if it's outside that range, whether it's bullish or bearish, it'll be a dramatic event. So it's kind of hard to imagine to be outside that range unless, you know, the trade has totally missed something somewhere. So we'll get the numbers, trading for a little while, then focus back to weather.
Well, the world is awash with coarse grains this year.
Well, there's plenty of supply around. You know, we got ample supplies of grain around. Producer worldwide's a tight holder. The producers kind of trapped long in through here. He's producer worldwide, kind of sweating it out here, hoping for some weather event to happen other than his own area there to get the market to go up so he can move some more cash grain. So we'll have confirmation of how big those supplies are tomorrow morning, and it's going to kind of be in a situation where it's going to be hard to rally the market sharply higher until we get more into the growing season.
What should the U.S. producer with old crop corn to market begin to think about?
Well, each individual is different. I mean, and I know people get tired of hearing that, but that's very true. And that's what a lot of our phone calls are. What should I do with my old corn? We get those, quite a few of those daily. We kind of visit a little bit on their own situation. We like kind of take advantage of the firm basis we've seen, moving it and replacing ownership on paper. Most conservative thing you do is enter the option market. Option volatility is extremely low for this time of year. We've not gotten into the growing season yet. We zapped quite a bit of weather premium out of it. So there's quite a bit of opportunities where you can move your cash grain, have your money, and retain ownership on paper for just a minimal amount of risk when you use the option or an option strategy there. So if the market goes up, you can participate. The market doesn't go anywhere, well, all you have at risk is whatever the option strategy puts you into. But if we have a rally, it's going to be more on paper than it will be in the cash market. They'll widen the basis out on you. The commodity funds, the taxi cab driver, the secretary at these cocktail parties will be buying futures, not the cash corn, Dave.
What about on the basis side? You mentioned some sort of a basis play. Is the basis to your liking in many locales right now?
For the most part, yeah. Seasonally and not everywhere, but for the most part, there's been some fairly solid cash bids. And as a cash grain marketer, you got to kind of keep an eye on that, and you got to stay flexible. If you're in a situation where you can take advantage of three or four different locations, you got to keep an eye on that and catch those bids and try to get the best cash price you can. And once we get the crop planted, there's no weather scare here by mid-June. I think guys are going to be more willing to let this cash grain go.
All right. Thank you very much, Kurt.
All right. Take care, Dave.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
In agricultural news, President Barack Obama's bid for new fast-track trade authority faces big tests in Congress this week, mostly from his fellow Democrats. Pro-trade senators must produce 60 votes Tuesday to begin debate on fast-track authority. It would let the president present Congress with proposed trade agreements that lawmakers can ratify or reject, but not amend. Fast-track opponents can block Senate action unless roughly 6 to 10 Democrats join Republicans in preventing a filibuster. Most congressional Democrats, especially in the House, oppose new trade deals, saying they hurt U.S. workers and cost jobs. Even if pro-trade senators muster 60 votes tomorrow to begin debate on fast-track, senators can offer amendments that could prove troublesome, including a currency manipulation provision that administration officials consider more problematic than the one in the customs bill that would allow the U.S. to take action against countries that value their currency artificially low. Iowa is facing a crisis trying to destroy and dispose of roughly 23 million birds from poultry operations infected with highly pathogenic H5N2 avian influenza. Iowa State and USDA officials are struggling to find landfills willing to accept the volume of carcasses that can come from giant poultry houses that normally hold hundreds of thousands or even millions of birds that are dying from the virus. China has notified the World Trade Organization on how much the government spent on domestic farm supports back in 2010. China spent $4 billion on product-specific farm subsidies in 2010, which is a 30% increase from the year before, while total non-product-specific support was $15.7 billion, a 10% increase from 2009. In comparison, U.S. and European Union product-specific domestic support in 2010 was $4.4 billion and $9.3 billion, respectively. U.S. and EU non-product-specific market support in 2010 was $5.5 billion and $913 million. The supply of meat in the United States is on the upswing this year. It had fallen off by about 20 pounds per person between 2007 and 2014, but now it's making a comeback, says Purdue Extension agricultural economist Chris Hurt.
Current USDA estimates are that per capita meat availability could surge by nearly 9 pounds this year. That'll be led by chicken and turkey with about 5 pounds, and pork could add an impressive 4 pounds per person. This means the meat industry in just 1 year is going to restore about 45% of the lost availability that occurred from 2007 to 2014.
This calculation does not include any reduced availability due to the bird flu outbreak. It is likely to reduce total poultry, that's chicken and turkey, meat production in 2015. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Weed scientists from the University of Illinois have been trying to help farmers manage the certain development of herbicide resistance for more than two decades. Todd Gleason reports there is now proof which advice actually works.
Plants are quite capable, by the way, of evolving. Weeds like water hemp have evolved. These weeds are resistant to some of the herbicides used to control them. It was thought by many weed scientists this evolution would take place much more quickly with the overuse of any particular active ingredient. So extension specialists like Aaron Hager from the University of Illinois promoted the rotation of herbicides and modes of action. They didn't have proof this would work, but now they do, with qualifications.
We realized that there really were not a lot of empirical data to describe how effective these actually were on a very large landscape level. And so we undertook a project several years ago, it was started, to try to determine which may be some of the better recommendations that actually do slow this evolution, perhaps better than other recommendations would. And one specific one that we looked at was, okay, which might be more effective? Is it more effective for a farmer to rotate herbicides either within a given year or between years? Or is a more effective strategy yet to actually use tank mix combinations of herbicides every time an application is made?
Using the records of a retail applicator, the scientists poured through more than 500 site years' worth of field-level data. The final analysis included 66 variables for each of the fields surveyed for the presence or absence of glyphosate-resistant water hemp.
To make a long story short, what the analysis really showed was that the most important determination of whether or not glyphosate resistance was present in any particular field was the management.
The management of the field as a whole, not just as it related to glyphosate.
Really, the thing that was a bit surprising to us was the fact that simply rotating herbicides either within a year or perhaps even between years really did not have a positive effect on the occurrence of glyphosate resistance. As a matter of fact, by simply rotating one herbicide 1 year to another the next year, the incidence of resistance was actually higher compared with areas where we had used multiple effective tank mixtures for applications made to that particular population.
Aaron Hager concludes the best way to slow evolution of glyphosate-resistant water hemp is to expose any given population to more than one effective herbicide every time an application is made. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
Joining us now with Cash Grant Analysis is Amy Sage of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Amy.
Hello, Dave.
With the WASDE report due out tomorrow, did the phones ring at all regarding how bases in that report might intermingle?
Not a lot, to be honest with you. Obviously, guys are really focused on rains and if they have their crop in the ground, how much they're getting and trying to get everything finished up and wrapped up here in this immediate area. So not too much excitement around tomorrow's report. We have been talking basis levels with folks here lately. Obviously, so far this year, basis levels have continued to improve, contrary to having an extremely large crop. So we do still continue to see that happening. Not a lot of liquidation in the old crop, so two ways to look at that. Basis could continue to improve until we see some selling pressure, but also keep that in mind for board prices, as there is still quite a bit of old crop corn left to be sold, whether it be at the elevator on DP or still in the hands of the farmer.
Yeah, there's a lot of old crop corn still out there. And new crop with the basis as good as it is, is anybody taking advantage of a basis lock-in?
Not on existing hedges. At this point, you know, a lot of times people want to wait and see where we're at closer to pollination, which I don't necessarily think is a terrible idea. Basis levels for fall, like you said, are very attractive for a normal-sized crop. But don't envision them sinking too much further down until we see what type of crop is out there or until we see some selling pressure. Now, if people are putting new sales on, then rather than paying an HGA fee, going ahead and locking in the cash at these basis levels, which is probably the thing to do.
And how much locking in of price is there right now for new crop soybeans?
Little to none.
That's surprising, isn't it?
It is. It is. Beans have held their own. Again, I think pretty widespread, particularly in front of the March 30th acreage intentions. Most people have been a little bit more concerned about new crop beans because, at least here in the U.S., the acres have been there. We've seen good crops from South America. And ultimately, I do think that these prices probably will be pretty good. But still not seeing a lot of trigger pulling.
Thank you much, and let's get your prices today.
You bet. Cash corn today were $3.54. New crop $3.55. Fall soybeans, near crop soybeans $9.74, and new crop at $9.29.
Appreciate it, Amy.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Amy Sage of the Andersons. She's in Champaign, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with the folks from Earth Risk Technologies out of Chicago to look at weather prospects. It's National Mocha Tort Day. On this day in agricultural history, in 1838, Thomas Andrew Knight died, a British horticulturalist and botanist. He initiated the field of fruit breeding, and he studied the effects of pollen in the garden pea on seed characteristics. He also investigated controlled environmental culture, better known as greenhouses, as well as plant nutrition, fertilization, and pest control. In 1886, W. Marshall patented a grain binder.
In 1934, a two-day Dust Bowl storm caused major ecological and agricultural damage to the American and Canadian prairies. The phenomenon was caused by severe drought, coupled with decades of extensive farming without crop rotation or other techniques to prevent erosion. In the 1930s, millions of acres of farmland became useless for planting. The Dust Bowl was centered on the panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma, as well as parts of New Mexico, Colorado, and Kansas. And in 1946, B.F. Goodrich announced the development of the tubeless tire. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from Busey. With more than 145 years of experience, Busey understands the benefits healthy businesses provide the local economy. Proudly partnering with the business community since 1868. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Joining us with a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Mark Russo from Earth Risk Technologies out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Dave.
So I guess the question on everybody's mind is, across the Midwest, how closed is the planting window this week?
Well, following just some limited rainfall here across Illinois today, we see open weather here for the next several days. And now it's just a matter of some of the fields here are drying out in the cooler than normal weather that's now in the process of moving in. But it's going to be short-lived as we do see temperatures moderating here. And the next chance of precip here coming up for Illinois and Indiana is going to take place later in the day on Thursday and on into Friday. And then beyond that, we do see some more rain, but all in all, we do not see any kind of pattern that would really bog things down across the Midwest. The most active area continues to be not the Midwest, but actually the Southern Plains, which continues to see the heaviest rainfall.
So the storm at the end of this week, as advertised, not a widespread one across the Corn Belt?
It will see more widespread in precip totals in some sections of the Midwest, but kind of like with this last one, we had one kind of swath of higher totals extending from Missouri into central and southern Illinois, but far northwest Illinois and then Iowa kind of missed out with a significant precip. So we're going to see kind of a similar type of pattern with the higher totals coming up later on this week.
So, as in any planting season, it is the last 5% that we wring our hands about and argue about and decide whether or not it's actually going to get in the ground or not in a timely fashion. What can you tell us looking out 2 weeks?
Well, we see here kind of more of the same, and certainly the pattern is more active versus what it has been, but talk about that stretch that we had back ending April and at least the start of May. That couldn't have come at a better time, and that allowed especially the vast majority of corn to be planted. But for soybean planting, it's going to be a little bit slow going, but you're still not getting to levels that would be concerning for not having anything planted. Obviously, we got a ways to go here, even into early June, but we do not see a pattern that would really bog things down here going forward.
Very quickly, any place in the world that's a hot spot at the moment?
Yeah, North Africa and Spain, particularly for durum wheat interests across that area. They've been very hot and dry here of late, and that's stressing their crop as it goes through the yield-sensitive stages. Particularly in North Africa, it's Algeria, which is the largest durum wheat producing country there in North Africa. So they continue to have problems here, and no sign of that changing here going forward.
Thank you much, Mark.
You're welcome, Dave.
Mark Russo of Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago, Illinois, and that is today's closing market report. Remember to subscribe to our free Aggie newsletter. You can do that at willag.org. This is Dave Dickey.